Hey kids, if you have a memoir or a novel draft that you're in the process of revising, Author Accelerator has a free treat for you. Ready, Set, Revise, a 3-hour workshop that will help you evaluate your manuscript, figure out where you are in the process, and hopefully make it all less painful. The actual workshop is on Friday, July 8th from noon to 3 p.m. Pacific time, so that's 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. During the workshop, Author Accelerator book coaches, including Jenny Nash, will explain how best to think about revision, talk about the things that writers most often get wrong, and, this is so cool, put you in a small group with a coach who coaches the kind of books you write. This is a great chance to get yourself in the right headspace to finish that book up right. So, for details and to sign up, head to authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator. That's authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator, and of course, the link will be in the show notes. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of the hashtag AmWriting Blueprint Challenge. As always, hashtag AmWriting is the weekly podcast for fun, fresh, actionable writing advice for writers in all genres, fiction, all the different kinds, nonfiction, memoir. We are here to help you get inspired and get the work done. I am KJ Dell'Antonia. I'm the author of 2 novels, The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, as well as a nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherload at the New York Times.
And I'm Jenny Nash. I'm author of 11 books in 3 genres, and I'm the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator and creator of the Blueprint Framework for Writing Better Books.
My usual co-hosts, Jess and Serena, will pop in from time to time, but for this 10-episode series, it's going to be me, Jenny, and our book coach guests focusing in on books, specifically creating a blueprint that will help you take a book idea from amorphous blob to solid plan. And so whether you're at the inspiration stage, or you have a few chapters written, or you're sitting on a big chunk of draft and trying to figure out how to pull that together, and we've all been there, this series is going to help you get things in shape and make taking your idea to the next stage easier. But if a book isn't in your plans, no worries, keep listening, because we're going to have a great time talking about what kinds of structures build a book and make a book work. And that makes reading way more interesting, and it might spark some ideas that could lead you to a book down the road.
Today, we are joined by guest book coach Michelle Cox. Michelle is an Author Accelerator certified book coach, and she loves helping women in midlife and people in recovery tell their truths through fiction and nonfiction. She has nearly 3 decades of experience as a professional writer, editor, journalist, and writing coach. So welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yay!
So in our first 2 episodes, we dug down into why we write and how to share that why with the reader. And in the last episode, we hung a quick write, different kind of write, and got really practical about that reader and how to reach them. In other words, we talked about the market and why it's important to understand where your book will sit on the shelf if you want the right readers to find it. So in this episode, we are going to talk about what happens when one of those potential readers picks your book up off that shelf and turns it over. So that means we're talking jacket copy. You might have heard writing advice that basically says, quit daydreaming about your cover before you've even written your book. This is different because jacket copy is important, and drafting it now will help you find your story. Jacket copy is the promise that you make to the reader, so the sooner you write it, the harder you can focus on either keeping it or changing it. And plus, it's useful in a whole lot of ways before you start worrying about cover art. So that's what we're going to talk about, but first, I'm just reminding y'all that this episode, this 10-episode series, comes with a challenge, and you can sign up to be part of that challenge at authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge. Do that, and you will get an email that comes along with every episode giving you an assignment and some more details about how to complete it and what we talked about. So the link's in the show notes, or if you're watching on YouTube, it's in the notes below the video. Complete the weekly assignments and get through all 10 episodes. And at the end, you're going to have a blueprint for your book, which is reward enough. But there are other possibilities. There are drawings to have me or Jenny offer a critique on your blueprint and join you for a 50-minute phone call to discuss your work. And there are ways to commit yourself to completing this process. And that means putting some money on the table and then getting an incredible bargain on a critique and phone call with an author accelerator book coach. So again, details, authoraccelerator.com/AmWritingBlueprintChallenge. That's the mundane, detail-y stuff. Now let's talk jacket copy, which I might add is terrifying for so many of us and in so many ways. Because you feel like I'm either good at this or I'm bad at this. So we're all going to be good at it.
Well, jacket copy, for those watching on YouTube, is literally the words on the jacket. I have here Mary Philpott's Bomb Shelter, and here I'm opening it, jacket copy. So it's on that, sometimes it's called flap copy. But the key thing to know about book jacket copy is it's sales copy. And that's why it's hard for people. It's different from writing fiction or writing memoir or writing nonfiction. You're literally writing sales copy. And most writers are not trained in that, in how to write copy. Michelle, you do happen to be trained in that.
A little.
But that's why it's so hard, is sometimes the language feels overblown. Sometimes it feels sort of puffy and like it's going to really do all these things. But the reason it's so valuable to write at this stage of the writing process, which is just the blueprinting stage, or if you're using the blueprint to revise your revision stage, is it helps you, the writer, really wrap your hands around what you're doing. You can really just put that jacket copy in your hands and hold it there and look at it and turn it around and think, do I want to write that book?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the, you talked about how some people are good at it and some people aren't. And I think it's a skill you can learn, right? It's got, you can be told what's supposed to be in there and whatever. But I have had clients tell me before, jokingly, but not really, that when they're done with the whole thing, they say it was harder to write the jacket copy than it was to write the book. You know, but it is, it's hard to summarize that big idea that you have down into something that is 250 words-ish.
Yeah.
So that stuff, the market things that we did, that we talked about in the last episode, and the part especially where you figure out what books are going to sit next to yours on the shelf, that's kind of where you start with this, right? Because you grab those books click on them online if you don't have copies, and you look at that back of the book blurb, the jacket copy, the first words that show up in the online, in the bookstore description of the book, and try to figure out, okay, well, what's in there that I now I'm going to have to put in my version of this?
That's right. And the comp titles, I love that idea. And I actually love the idea of going to an actual bookstore, a real bricks and mortar bookstore, and just kind of plopping yourself down and reading all the jacket copies on that shelf where you want to sit. It's just such a great experience of, yeah, what's the tone? What's the vibe? What's the language? What do I gravitate toward? What's that promise that they're making me? And to pay attention to the books that you want to take home with you. And I would also urge you, if you're at that bookstore, buy books so that that bookstore will be there the next time. But, that's a great process to use.
And get books that you've read, because then you know how far the book jacket copy goes, right? And how narrow it is. So your book jacket copy is usually the core of the book, right? It doesn't have, you know, you don't get to put in all the details. And that can be a little frustrating, to try to pack them in. But if you pick books that you've already read, you're like, oh, you know, this tells me, like, this pulled me in and made me want to buy the book, but it never told me, like, Where the Crawdads Sing. I don't have it here, or I probably do somewhere, but I don't think that the back of the book copy on that makes it clear. I think the mystery element that becomes a big part of the second half of the book isn't really in the back. Like, it's just, maybe it's the final line of the back of the book copy. So that's interesting too, is like what makes it and what doesn't.
Well, and Michelle, you work with a lot of memoir writers and people who are writing about their recovery stories, or that's their motivation or inspiration. And what book jacket copy forces you to do is realize that you can't just tell your life story, because it's not going to, right? It's going to make terrible book jacket copy if you do that. What's that experience like?
Yeah, so that is really true, because I think that so many people, when they've gotten to the point in recovery that they want to write about the experience, they have some distance. And so they can look back and they can really connect the dots in their mind of like, oh, well, when I was 5, this happened. And when I was, you know, 8, this happened. And they can go through all these things. And so you might tell them at the beginning of the process that, you know, we're going to focus on a slice of your life. Because that's what a memoir is. It is not a, you know, biography that just goes through every single thing. And they might think that they really have a grasp on that concept. But when they come and sit down to write that book jacket copy, that's when they realize that they are looking at too broad of a section, and they might have to really start to narrow down. But I do think it also helps them kind of uncover, if they haven't done a great job of it so far, uncover those themes that they do want to, as they work through those iterations, they start realizing what's important and what they're trying to articulate even more so. Obviously, there's, you know, killer sentence help them articulate that a little bit. But when they come to expand on that and connect those themes, so that they can tell the reader, here's what this book is about and here's why you should care, they start making those connections.
And that is an excellent point about the blueprint, because if you do get to this exercise of jacket copy, it may make the light bulb go on about, oh, now I know what my point is. I'm going to go back and refine that. And actually, I know something more about why I want to do this. I'm going to refine that. It forces you to move around and jump around and continue to just deepen your understanding of what you're trying to do.
Right.
Do you find that people have trouble, Michelle, doing it in a short space? Because the jacket copy is very constrained. Do they want to write 10 pages, or how does that go?
100%. I think that's always the case, that they can't get it in so many words. So if you could say 250 words, they're always going to bring you more than that. But if you say, you know, well, you can go ahead and go a page, then you get to, you know, it's obviously getting way too long, and no one's going to, you know, the readers, I know when I'm looking at a book at the bookstore, if it's that long, I'll skim the first few sentences, you know, just like anybody, you're going to hurry through it. So they've really got to get to that point. And I think your point about, you know, working through those exercises, it's so valuable that they can, if they do discover as they're writing through that, oh, maybe this is really what I want to focus on. And they'll go back and revise their point before they come back to the jacket copy again. I just had to say, the nicest part about that is at least they're not 30,000 or 50,000 words into a manuscript when they discover that and realize they have to. Yeah. I mean, that's the best thing. And I know people are saying like, well, I didn't think that's what I was going to write about, but now I think maybe I am. And I'm like, oh, and it's so awesome, because we've only done like 3 or 4 pages of exercises right. So far.
Right. Yay, that's the whole point.
You. Right. Yeah.
So you can solve all the problems.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this one, I really do think that starts to come up a lot.
So I've been sitting here pulling some books down off of the vast collection of books around me to sort of gather there's not really a formula for this, or if either of you have a formula, I think people would love to hear it, but to just pull a few, and I've got some memoirs here and some fiction, and they all kind of go, who? So, in her early 30s, Elizabeth Gilbert had everything.
Is that A.K. Love?
Yes, it is.
Wait, we should play
in
a
this
game.
Novel.
We should play
oh, gosh,
a game.
No. We should. I should have. But they're not all famous ones. In this novel of the gritty jazz age, an aspiring young photographer named Dorothea Lange arrives in San Francisco, a newcomer and a naive one. Okay, so, and then when Jennifer Richard joins Microsoft in 1991, she met her husband and became an extra lucky beneficiary of the dot-com boom. So those are who. The first sentence, and maybe the first is all who. And the next thing is kind of what, but it's not usually what, like the whole book. It's more what made the person, what makes this a
like
book.
Why now, why today?
So if it's... Exactly. Why now? What? So if you were talking, so there's often a but. But This is Elizabeth Gilbert again. Instead of feeling happy and fulfilled, she felt consumed by panic and confusion. To go back to Dorothea Lange, that's the Bohemians, which is a book that I loved. There's no but for her, but she's dazzled and catapulted into a heady new world. So that's what happens to her. She had kind of a but. She sheds her innocence. You know, the but on the Jennifer Richard, the one with the person who is the lucky beneficiary of the dot-com boom. The but is basically, she gets rich, but she's a middle-class person and doesn't know how to deal with it. You know, recognize, fully understand, this is a book we would all like to have written. But, you know, it's interesting. It's a memoir I happen to have sitting here. So it's like, who? What and why? And then they kind of seem to go into themes. Is that what you guys see? Is that what you encourage people to do?
So I guess like when I'm working on issues, it's funny because we're all in different spots on each of the screens.
Yeah, I'm pointing to you, but yeah.
I think for me, you know, when someone's first starting out, I don't think it has to be formulaic, but I think it's helpful to have a formula until they are ready to massage it, because then at least they get the things down. So I'm always like, you know, tell us like who, obviously, and then what's the thing, what's the problem. Or what's the thing that, if it's fiction, you know, what's the thing your character is going to come up against? Like, what's that, if there's a way to work in that problem or those obstacles, what the stakes are. So that kind of what is there. If they're writing nonfiction, you know, it's like, what's that transformation that is going to happen? Like, what are we going to try and show you? Kind of give them a hint at what their journey is going to be in that nonfiction book. And then the big thing is the why, that takeaway, that message, that thing that, you know, in a fiction book, I think if you have to hint at it a little bit more, because you don't want to just come right out and like, this is the theme of this book. You know, you're not in a high school English class, but I do think that has to get in there.
Yeah, we haven't done much about nonfiction, so I wanted to pull out some of those because it is a little different there, although it does seem to start with the expert voice, you know, why this author?
Well, what's interesting about a nonfiction book jacket is that you actually want to get in all the same elements that are in a proposal, which is, who is the book for? Why do they need it? What transformation does it promise? What structure is it going to use to lead the reader through this? You know, it might be in 365 entries, or in 12 essays, or in 14 exercises, you know, something about the structure and what is the takeaway or the point for the reader, and really something about why are you the best person to write this book. And so you've got to sneak all of those things into 250 words, which is really, really hard, and it means every single sentence matters. And the question some people are going to be asking is, why should I do all that very specific and particular work when I haven't, you know, all we've done so far is talk about why I want to write this book, what my point is, where it might fit in the marketplace. Now all of a sudden you want me to write book jacket copy? You know, they get a little startled by how we're leaping so far ahead. But it really is a way to force you to think about those things and to think about the shape and the structure. It's true for nonfiction, absolutely. The you can get all of the elements of the book into the jacket copy. But also, we talked about last time comps, and you can use comps in jacket copy to help you understand. Like, I believe, KJ, a book you and I know have both read, The Other Black Girl by... It's a Zakiya Dahlia Harris. And that book is often described as a combination of The Devil Wears Prada and Get Out, the Jason Peele movie. I don't have it right at my hand, but...
I do, but what I have is an advanced copy, so I don't have
the jacket.
It doesn't have the jacket.
I'm going to look it up on Amazon while we speak, because... that is actually a great thing to put into jacket copy too, is that...
Oh, this, it does kind of have it. Yeah.
There's so many things to say about this book. So The Other Black Girl, okay, I've got the jacket copy, which is usually the thing you get online when you pull it up. And does it say that?
Mine doesn't, but it, I mean, it should, because I, one of the problems that I see in the way this book was received, and I mean, it was received great. It hit the bestseller list. It's done really well. But if you look at Goodreads reviews of it, you'll find a lot of readers, and I was kind of one of them, although I read it in advance, so I didn't know a lot about it, that were caught by the Devil Wears Prada, but missed the Get Out piece. And those readers were kind of like, they were seriously thrown off. So I don't know if the jacket copy gave them, you know, gave readers enough to know that, because this is a whole thing for another time. This issue, this thing where if you put what something is in the jacket copy, you also give away all of its twists.
Yeah.
So that's really complicated.
Right, and that's not our job. That's the marketing people's job.
Right. So you just write your jacket copy now and don't worry about that piece of it.
But I mean, it is interesting because what we're talking about is that same thing of what are you promising the reader? What are you offering? And that's what doing this work now is all about, is making sure you understand that. And what are you trying to serve up to them? What is that intention? And it's a way to encapsulate those ideas and kind of lock them down.
Because readers who don't get what they were promised are angry readers. You know, these are the ones that are throwing a book across the room in book talk because they thought it was a romance and then one of the protagonists dies. those are not happy people, and you don't want them.
Or here's another example. And again, we're kind of morphing into talking about sales, but I think it is matters to what we're doing here. So I bought a bunch of books. I was trying to solve a problem. So this is a nonfiction thing, right? Readers have things they're trying to solve. They want to learn something. They want to know something. They want to do something. The problem that I was trying to solve was I made a decision. It was sort of a New Year's resolution. I wanted to get better about understanding numbers. And I know that seems silly, but, you know, I'm 58 years old and I just have a real aversion around numbers, and I run a business and my business is growing and I have to deal with a lot of numbers. And I was like, I gotta get comfortable with this. So I'm gonna look for some books. So I bought a book I'm holding up here called Making Numbers Count by Chip Heath of Chip and Dan Heath fame. They wrote Made to Stick, that awesome marketing book. So I see this book, it's called The Art and Science of Communicating Numbers, Making Numbers Count. And I read the book jacket copy and I'm, it's like, this is the opening line. How much bigger is a billion than a million? Well, a million seconds is 12 days. A billion seconds is 32 years. And I was like, oh, this is the book for me. This is 100% the book that I want. And so I bought this book, and it turns out to not be as great as I thought it was. I think Chip without Dan is not as good as Chip by himself. And it also feels kind of like just a bunch of little blog posts. I am learning things and I do like it. But it's that idea of promise, of what am I looking for? So another book that I bought in this book buying thing was Miss Independent, which was on the New York Times bestseller list when I was searching. A simple 12-step plan to start investing and grow your own wealth. So this is a book not actually written for me. It's kind of written for very young women who are just starting in the working world. But when I read the jacket copy, it just spoke to me in a way that was like, oh, I want that kind of confidence or that sort of knowing, or that's kind of what I was seeking. So I bought all these books that were trying to solve that thing that I couldn't really name. And what Book Jacket Copy does at the sales point, but when you're beginning to write the book too, is what are you giving me? What are you promising me? What am I going to get? If I buy these 10 books about numbers and money, what is yours going to do that these other ones aren't going to do? How are you going to help me with my problem? That's really what we want you to know before you start to write, so that you can write something that helps me.
And that's why you do it now. so you can write something that helps me, or so that you can write something that fulfills my expectations of your story, or so that you can write the part of your life that I expect for you to share with me if this is a memoir.
That's right.
And it I really get caught up in making the language perfect, but it doesn't hurt.
Oh, I think that's part of what's fun about it, actually. I think that's part of the power of this exercise is, well, and Michelle, you can speak to this, because if people are approaching their own story, let's say, and they're trying to figure out the edges of the shape of it, or why would anybody care? It's just my story. It's this thing that happened to me, but I want to share it. I want to, you know, help people. Doing it their own selves and crafting it and paying attention to language and those things allows them to feel like, oh, I like this book. I want to write this book, right?
It does. I think it does that. So it sort of lets you start to explore your voice and how you're going to articulate your story, or if it's fiction or nonfiction or your fiction story. But also I think it, as they do that, they start to create that thing that a reader will pick the book up and say, the two most powerful words in recovery, but also I think in humanity, is me too. Oh my gosh, me too. Like, it might be a different way of saying it. It might be a different experience, but somewhere in there, as they're massaging that and trying to get that message across of what they're promising, someone will hear or connect to a piece of that and say, this is the right book for me. Or they might look at it and say, oh, this is definitely not the right book for me. I need that. That's going to be too romance, or that's going to be too, you know, dry or whatever, and they can move on.
And you as a writer may be like, oh, I don't want anyone to look at my book and say, oh, this is not the book for me. But yes, you
100% do. Yes.
Yeah. We can't write for everyone. And you don't want the people who aren't going to like your book to buy it. Because like I said, they're the ones that'll throw across the room on TikTok. And, you know, that's not, there are plenty of readers for your book.
Right.
We don't need all the making. The couple bucks you get from the wrong person buying your book is not worth the pain of having the wrong people buy your book.
So let's actually, I want to talk about this for a minute, because I think this point is enormously important, and it really touches on what we're talking about here, which is, again, I keep going back in these sessions to the word intention. If you're writing your book because you want other people to read it, a lot of writers struggle with that reality. They enter into writing because they think, oh, I want to be a writer. I want to tell the story. Wouldn't it be cool? You know, they sort of are hedging their bets. They're not saying, this is what I'm doing. This is what I want. This is my intention. And there's nothing wrong. However you come to writing, it's great. Come to it however you need to come to it. But when you get to the point where you want to be read, you have to start thinking in this way. And what KJ just said, that, you know, what most people do is they think, I'm thinking of nonfiction here, but it's true with every genre. All the soccer moms will read my book about soccer moms. That is what they will do. Or, you know, like this nonfiction book, like all the young women just starting on their careers will read my book. And what KJ said is, no, they will not. They will not. And I have been doing some research lately into what kind of numbers publishers would like for books to sell. So we all know the vast majority of books sell, like selling 1,000 copies is kind of a good thing. Selling 10,000 copies, a really good thing. KJ, you probably have a sense of what it takes to get on the New York Times bestseller list, because you were recently on it. And I know you have friends and associates who are on it, but it's not actually as many copies as people might think. And, you know, someone like Stephen King or Michelle Obama, you know, sells gazillions of millions of copies. I don't know, is that a number? Do you see why I need help? We think that's what we need to do with our book, but it's actually not true. And the research that I was finding is that what publishers really are looking for, I'm talking here about the big four or five, however many there are now, you know, like 30,000 or 40,000 copies would be an extremely successful outcome for a big national publisher, that book would probably earn out its advance. It would probably warrant second books. Like that's a pretty good number. And I think it's so helpful to have these numbers in mind because you're not actually thinking a million people are going to buy this book. And if you start thinking like that, you start realizing I can be very specific. I can be very particular. I can write to this very narrow idea or pain that this reader has or interest that this reader has, and it's going to do well. And I think that the book jacket copy is one of the ways that helps us refine that idea of who we're speaking to.
Oh, I agree 100%. I'm working with a client right now, Jenny, that is writing a book about how a wife's relationship changes and how her identity changes when her spouse has a stroke, and what that caregiving does to the relationship, and how you can eventually find the hope and redefine the relationship. But when we first started talking, she wanted to write a book for stroke caregivers.
Right.
It was like that huge umbrella. And I said, like, that's probably too big. We are going to have to narrow that down. And as we talked about it, you know, she said, well, but there are, you know, this could apply to husbands. It could apply. But as we went through, though, she realized that there are plenty of people in her audience narrowed down to wives of people who have had strokes. Like, there's plenty of those people out there. It's, you know, the number one cause of disability in the country. Like, there's a ton of those people will be interested in her book. But yeah, I mean, those numbers are great to be able to share that maybe you only need 1,000 of those people to find your book, you know?
Well, and that's just a perfect example, because if you make that kind of definition, everything changes. How the language, like we were talking about finding your voice and that the book jacket copy is a exercise to do that. How you speak to your reader will 100% change if you're now not speaking to men and children and, you know, all the other people who could be caregivers. If you're speaking to wives, that totally changes. And the topics that you're speaking about are going to change. And
drastically.
Yeah, everything is going to change based on that decision. So when you're writing... So you said something that I experience a lot with people writing book jacket copy is it's usually extremely vague. It's usually just very vague. And whether it's fiction, memoir, or nonfiction, doesn't matter. The first time people do this, it's there's no there, right? There's no center there. And that's actually what we want, because then we want the writer to look at that and say, oh, I see that there's no there. I've got to dig further. I've got to refine more. I've got to, you know, or in fiction, that everything in the kitchen sink instinct, like KJ talks about, you know, well, there's a sister and then there's this really interesting person who's the neighbor. And then they have a friend who's a this, and, you know, you start piling on all these subplots and all these characters and all these relationships, and you lose what is this really about?
Well, this is why this exercise of going into the bookstore and looking at the books that are comps to yours or will sit near it is so important, because so I can imagine your writer, Michelle, saying, well, I want to write a book for all caregivers, because there's lots of caregivers and lots of the experience is the same. But then picture yourself as a reader and you're standing in front of the shelf at the bookstore and you have a choice. All caregivers. Specific caregivers who are like you, who are going through like the stroke, you're going to go specific. Right. It sounds better to go broad, but it's really better to go narrow.
100%. I think, and we talk about the bookstore exercise, I think one of the other things to take that exercise just a little further is to find the books maybe on that front table or the ones that are in the bestseller section or whatever that are in your space, and grab those, and then go and find the ones that are in your space that aren't, and flip them over.
That's
and
smart.
Look and see what the difference is in the book jacket copy. Because it's possible that the ones that aren't were really good books, but they didn't find their people. Or their people didn't find them.
That's brilliant. So another, just this flake off a little bit, but another use. So there's other uses for this copy, and there's another reason that you're doing it. So in the nonfiction space, you're going to use this in your proposal. It's probably the intro to the proposal. So it's great to write it early. And in the fiction space, it's probably your query, right? So if you're in the fiction space and you want to hear a lot of these in process, you should go and check out the Shit No One Tells You About Writing podcast, where they read two or three or four of these every week. And what made me remember this was Jenny saying they're all start vague. And they do. They're all like, you know, the book that I'm writing, title redacted, is about, you know, a person experiencing the most dramatic changes of their lifetime. These changes will make them rethink everything and view life in a different light.
That's exactly
they all say that. Yeah. And it's like, and the hosts are always like, yeah, everybody drink now because this is vague. So it's really helpful to recognize that those are cop-outs. And you can't be like that.
It's I love that. That's a great thing to do. I sometimes wish that writers had access to the information that book coaches have, which is that we get to see a lot of work in progress. So we get to see a lot of work that's not good yet. And we get to see the transformation that people go from vague, like you just did, KJ. We see that every day. And then we see that it is absolutely possible to move from that to, like Michelle was speaking about, a book that has a potential to be on that front table, that has a potential to grab a readership, that, you know, is specific and just crystalline and awesome. And those books those are the ones that we're pressing into our friends' hands and saying, you have to read this. This is going to, you know, open your eyes. It's going to change your life. It's going to give you a great experience, you know, whatever that might be. But word of mouth is everything. And you can't have word of mouth with a really vague book. And so the doing this book jacket copy now, if you do it and you read yours and you're like, oh no, mine is that vague sort of amorphous, all the things, kitchen sink thing. Don't beat yourself up for that. That's where everybody starts. And that's why we do it, is that you can see it and you can say, oh, this is not like those books on the front table at the bookstore. I gotta sharpen this up. Michelle, what do you do after that exercise when somebody has done that and they come back and they say, oh, I get it now. I'm not on that front table level yet. How do you help them get there?
So I think, again, sometimes it's very intimidating. And a lot of the people that I work with didn't plan, you know, like they didn't grow up thinking, oh, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to get a degree, and this is always my dream. Especially the writers in recovery that decide to tell their truths, like through fiction or nonfiction. That wasn't necessarily something they planned to do, but now they're really called to do it. And so what a lot of times I'll do is say, copy the ones you liked the best. So take a couple that you liked and take that first sentence that they have and figure out what the first sentence about your book can be just like it. You can even steal some of their words because this is not necessarily going to get there, right?
Totally.
But start to mimic some of those things and then look at their second sentence and what in your story could match that. And your stories aren't going to be the same. You know, the books aren't the same, but start to try and copy it. And do the exact same thing that they did. And then if there's a piece of it that doesn't work, that just there's no parallel in your story, pull the next one up that you like. And I think that, you know, sort of mimicking those ones that are good, that really grab their attention, will help them get there.
I love that.
So Jenny, what is the assignment for people this week? I think we can guess, but if you're following along with the blueprint for a book challenge or just working on your blueprint, what do you do now?
You're going to write your book jacket copy. And I would say that the assignment also includes go do the bookstore thing. Literally go do it. Make yourself go do it. Don't just say you're going to do it. It being in the space, having to walk up to a particular shelf, seeing what's there, seeing what's on the front table versus what's on the shelf, all of those things, the teaching is in being in that space and in that place and feeling what that's like to be the reader. And even though a lot of us find our books online now, that experience of moving through that bookstore space happens in the online space too. It just happens in a less physical way or a less three-dimensional way, but do that work of going to look at the jacket copy and seeing what works and what kind of book would you want to write and what would you want people to feel when they read that jacket copy, and then do your draft and see if you can make something that you want to read that you're excited about.
Michelle, I want to thank you so much for being with us for this episode. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Sure. I am at bookcoachingworks.com. And they can also find me at addictstoauthors.com.
Addictstoauthors. Okay.
Addictstoauthors.com. Yes. Thanks. And I had a great time being here, so I appreciate you asking me.
Yes. So if you want to learn more about the Blueprint for a Book Challenge, again, authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge. You can check that out anytime. The series of emails and this work is going to be available as we're doing it and ongoing into the future. You can learn more about the Am Writing Podcast by going to, surprise, amwritingpodcast.com. You can reach out and communicate with us by emailing pretty much me at amwriting@substack.com. That's it. That's all the things. So I'm going to take us out this time. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Hey kids, KJ here, inviting you to pre-order In Her Boots wherever you like to do that sort of thing. So my latest book, In Her Boots, is about the adult we know we are, the kid our mothers will always see, and our terrible fear that our mothers are right. But it's also about an accidental literary hoax, a family farm, and BFFs who will do anything to help each other show the world who they really are. So if it sounds like you'll like it, you probably will. And if it's not for you, maybe it's for your mom, your sister, or your BFF. And books make great hostess gifts. Pre-orders tell booksellers that this is a book readers will want and encourage them to keep it on their shelves. So as a bonus, if you pre-order, I will happily send you a signed book plate and an adorable cowboy boot sticker to show off your city girl in the country vibe, or vice versa. So head to kjdelantonia.com for all the details. Thanks!